Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here with Josh Ulsewicz. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
It's going well, man. I'm thrilled. I am thrilled to be here with you today.
Are you?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound enthusiastic.
I am beyond enthusiastic. I could not be having more fun. We're farming. You know, farming is hard, Josh. These hands, they're so weak, but I'm trying to build my calluses up. But you know, I'm farming early, I'm farming late, sun up to sun down. I can't stop the farming, and I'm working on having stronger hands. You know, I'm time locking my bags, my heavy bags, for a few days here and there, because a lot of times I just gotta dump my bags. You know, like, I've not worked up my proper farming holding diligence yet.
This analogy's gone on way too long.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, this stuff's still crazy. I know I don't think you're farming yet, but you're interested in doing some of the more chill farming stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm definitely still on the sidelines, but as we were talking before we started, if you think ETH is going higher and you think the volatility risk is fine, why not throw your ETH somewhere? At least something, you know? Yeah. Just to say you tried it. throw some ETH somewhere, see what happens. If you lose it all, whatever, you know, like, that's on you, but I think it's worth it. At this point, I think DeFi is kind of here to stay, sadly, at least in the near term. So there's that. The other part of it is, if you don't think ETH is for you, you can send a stablecoin or buy a stablecoin and send it to these pools.
That's the funny thing to me. I mean, one, you can earn yield on relatively low risk, because there's ways to earn on your Ethereum, on wrapped Bitcoin, on stablecoins, and you can even stack some of those. You can do lending. You can actually do lending and borrowing, and the yield will pay for the borrow fee. Like, there's several things like that you can do. So you're essentially taking advantage of a system, and you run the risk of the platform stuff, you know, like failure of the smart contracts, failure of the companies behind it. So it's not something necessarily that you want to go all in on, but there's yield to be had. And sometimes, even with these really low risk pairs, like, you're not in an altcoin, you can still make anywhere between maybe, like, let's say 20% and 100% APY per year. Like, that's a lot of money, you know? So say you go put, what isn't it going to be 32 Ethereum to stake? Right. So let's say you take your 32 Ethereum. Well, you can walk out in a year, and if you play your cards right, maybe you have 64 Ethereum. You may have to jump around your farming a little bit, but that's pretty good, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this obviously isn't going to last forever, and the yields right now are too good to be true forever. But at this point, you know, things have probably gone as bad as they can for, like, sushi, for example, and it's recovered, surprisingly. Like, the community has, aka Sam, has kind of saved it from its own implosion.
Yeah, I haven't even looked at the sushi chart in a while, except for I know they did some crazy stuff this morning. Because the guy that sold a bunch bought it back today, or sent
it. Yeah, like, but the price of the tokens, like, I could care less about. To me, it's like, the farming is where it's at. Like, yeah, we were talking about as well, like, if the price of the token goes up while you're farming it, you get the double whammy bonus of all that volatility upside or whatever. But
yeah, the sushi.
Like, at the end of the day, if you're farming, like, something with low volatility, you're just getting, like, dollar value regardless, right?
Yeah, you're just getting a yield on top.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at Yearn Finance. This is one of the most, like, I don't know, like, thorough products in the space. So Yearn.finance. And they have several products, but their vaults have been very popular. And I'm looking at the yields now. You have to connect a wallet, so that's not what people see on the video. If you deposit Ethereum, you get YETH in return, and it's basically just a Ethereum IOU, but then people are allowing you to do stuff with that YETH. Anyway, that's gone down already from like 100% APY when it launched to 25% now. And I think
which is still insane.
It is insane, but this is indicative of what I think we'll see more of.
Yeah.
What's interesting is the Curve liquidity pool token, which is a blend of DAI, USDC, USDT, and TUSD, that's still earning 80% on Yearn. So you can actually earn 80% APY through something that's auto-farming for you, because that's what Yearn does. It takes out all the – you don't do anything. You just get the return. So you're putting in the Curve stablecoin result. So you're farming – I think in this case, you're farming from Curve, which you get back in YCurve. Then you're putting it in Yearn, and you're getting another 80% from that. This is with stablecoins. And then what's funny is on Cream – Cream Finance is offering another pool where you take the Yearn Curve token that you get in response and you pool it with USDC on their site and you get another 100%. So like there's some tricks in here where you can end up like stacking what you earn out of these, and while you're taking advantage of the yields with all stablecoins, your risk is platform and protocol risk, but with all stablecoins you could get like 250% APY. So not doing your research on this is doing a disservice to yourself, in my opinion. And I know I was talking to somebody yesterday who has significant holdings of both MTA and Cream, and they weren't farming or staking any of it. And all they're doing on for themselves is losing the inflation. The inflation is just going to people that are doing the farming and the staking. So like they're really hurting themselves by holding an altcoin that is rewarding people who are doing farming and staking and all this crap, and they're not participating. Well, then that's just not smart, right? Like they needed to pay attention, because on some of these, the inflation is high enough to where if you're not farming it, you're almost doomed to get wrecked on it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're holding a coin that has staking, a proof of stake coin, and you're not staking, you're just deluding yourself, right? Like that's not a smart move.
Yeah. Like I've been holding, playing this Cream stuff because they're emerging really quickly with just tons of product development. And, you know, they've got lending and they've got borrowing and they've got pooling and Cream swap and all this crap. But I was kind of terrified because I bought it at 105, locked it up for the minimum 3 days. And then the real crazy one was I locked more up at 180. So when it kept going up, like I'm getting their massive inflation. I mean, they're printing thousands of Cream per day and rewards for people that are participating in their ecosystem. And it's like some of these have equaled out to maybe like 1,000% APY, which is nuts. Like if you break that down to weekly, what's that? Like maybe 10% a week? That's just crazy. Combine that with the price going up. So the price, if you blend the two together, then you can do pretty well for yourself. But you lock something away like that for a few days, you're running the risk of it, you know, the game catching up to itself and it dumping like crazy and you're out of luck. But if you're holding this and not doing that, you're totally losing on that scenario. So
yeah, it's a dance. It's a dangerous dance.
It is.
You don't want to be on the wrong side of the lockup for sure.
Yeah. And I'm finally understanding, like, you know, you talked about the DeFi Pulse time value locked rankings and stuff. I'm finally getting a better understanding of how these are calculated and what all it means. Calling them locked, it really varies by platform. So Cream, anytime I stake something on Cream or one of their pools, it's a 3-day lock. So after 3 days, I can do whatever I want. That's a decent amount of time, but you essentially always have people that are unlocking Cream, right? If it's only 3 days. Some of these others, they have these scales where you can choose to lock it for a year or 4 years or something and get a multiplier on it. So they're all kind of different. It's worth understanding how they're locked and what they do and all that.
And I think getting a yield on anything right now in the world is hard and low, which is why another reason why DeFi is exploding. Like you can't get these yields in traditional markets, legacy markets, right?
No.
So I think we're seeing people with like serious money get into this stuff for that reason alone, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, I quoted Michael Batnick, who the Animal Spirits podcast that he does is fantastic. If anyone wants to listen to a good kind of no nonsense, legacy podcast. And he had this tweet that was like, I'm surprised anyone's getting 0.6% APY. And it was, some bank or whatever messaging him that their savings account was adjusted down from 0.8% APY to 0.6% APY. And he said, it's hard to believe you can still get 60 basis points. And I'm just like, we should talk to Batnick about yield farming stable coins. We talked about 200% APY. And this is a total information advantage for people that are willing to take, to know the technology and take the risks. But I think the risks are less than the difference. What's that multiple? You know, 200% versus 0.6%. Like, I can't even do that math. That's like 400 times the multiple, right? There's obviously more than just platform risk that's being priced there.
Yeah.
That's educational risk. So anyway, I'm not trying to like scream at people and say, man, you better be farming sushi and it's 20,000% APY and all that. Like, I'm not saying that. These are popping up left and right. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do. I think that I am kind of screaming from the rooftops that if you're trading altcoins, if you're holding Ethereum, you're holding Bitcoin, and you're not considering the potential yield that you can get on top of your trade, you're doing yourself a disservice from at least understanding what you could be getting on top of that, especially if you're planning to hold something for a while. Then the price of, you know, the cost of getting some yield on that is not so bad. And this doesn't even count just being a liquidity provider and being in the pool, maybe earning fees from the pool directly. This is all just the, you know, free money token drops.
Quote unquote free money.
Yeah. Famous last words, right? You've got this tweet on your on your screen. What's that about?
Yeah, I'll talk about that in a second. But it's super attractive. Like I said, you can't get this yield anywhere else right now. And especially with price action, just charts in general, you can't get this yield on trading, like margin trading, anything right now, because it's just sideways mess, right? At least the past week.
Yeah, I'm honestly curious to see what is even what's even happening on that front, you know?
Like, I'd expect DeFi to pop off when everything is sideways or messy, right? Like when the trades are less obvious, people move into min-maxing yields somewhere, some way else, right? So it's either staking or it's yield farming, right? Some internal trading groups I'm in, we're talking a lot about this Raft BTC phenomenon where it's just exploding. You know, we talk about stable coins a lot with all the money coming into stable coins, and I think a lot of that's a product of all this yield farming stuff. Like USDC is just printing 20 million a pop like every other day, it seems like, which is good for crypto.
Yeah.
Tether's printing 250 million like every other day, it seems like.
Wrapped BTC is at 550 million almost locked.
Yeah, how many BTC is that though? That's like 80K BTC, right?
I guess.
So again, it's just supply and demand. So if BTC isn't being sold and it's being locked somewhere, even temporarily, that'll eventually have an effect on price. Like if miners are moving their BTC to wrapped BTC to get yields on it versus selling it for USD or some stable coin, like that is incredibly bullish because the selling pressure is gone, you know?
Yeah. I also think it's affecting people's desire to trade on any other chain. Like, you know, like the cost of just sending money out of your own wallet, because all of this stuff is occurring in your own wallet. Huge advantage there, even with Ethereum fees. Because alternatively, now I have to send stuff to a centralized exchange. I may have limitations on, you know, how I can withdraw that stuff once I submit it. What you lose in trading anything that's on a different chain, different network, a centralized exchange, it just makes it more annoying. So I think that's why we're seeing a lot of this wrapped BTC come in, because they can still participate in all this crap and they're earning yield on top of their BTC, which is amazing.
Yeah, and we talk about centralized exchanges versus decentralized exchanges. You know, like money is being moved from centralized exchanges into MetaMask, into DEXs. Like, that's the direction right now. So centralized exchanges have a lot to make up for, to find that difference somewhere. And but the other fear. Part, what's that?
A lot to fear as well.
Oh, for sure. Like, their lunch is being eaten, their milkshakes being drank. But something that's always that's been in the back of my mind for a while now is, what happens when ETH goes to proof of stake and the yields are better on farming than staking ETH? Like,
yeah, people might not stake ETH, or maybe there'll be some kind of setup where when you stake Ethereum, you get something in return, and then people will treat that like Ethereum still. Kind of like what they do with Yearn.
Yeah, it makes me worried for the security of ETH if more people are yield farming it than like staking it, right?
Yeah, theoretically that'll normalize though, right? Between what you earn on yield farming versus what you earn staking Ethereum, like the rewards should go up for staking Ethereum.
Theoretically. Well, the rewards for staking Ethereum have to be higher than a yield that you get anywhere else, because then what, right? Like, what's the point?
No, I think it'll naturally be lower because it's a more base layer protocol with fewer risks, theoretically. Like, I think yields on protocols will always be lower than yields on like new and shiny governance tokens, and a DEX trying to grab attention and using massive inflation as their initial distribution.
So, yes, I agree. So, down the line, ETH is going to have to deal with that eventually, right?
Yeah, like, I just think there will. I think you'll look at it the same, similar to the way you look at a portfolio construction, and you say, I want, 50% of my portfolio in Bitcoin, I want 20% of my portfolio in cash, and I want 30% of my portfolio in, a variety of higher risk altcoin plays or something. I think you would look at your the way you stake and the way you farm similarly, right? So if you're an Ethereum maximalist or something and you have all Ethereum, well, maybe you'll do Ethereum staking on the baseline protocol with like half your Ethereum, and you'll earn whatever that earns, say 10% a year. And then on top of that, you'll say, okay, well, now I'm going to do X, Y, and Z with the rest of my Ethereum, including trading ERC-20 tokens to adjust the way I manage risk elsewhere. But I don't know how Ethereum staking is going to work. Like, if it's going to be the type of thing where you stake it, you lock it up, and you get something in return. If there is any kind of ERC-20 representation of that Ethereum that you stake, then there will become derivative markets trading them as IOU Ethereum, because that's already what's happening with anything else.
Oh yeah, that's definitely going to happen for sure. But it's just an interesting like game theory management. Like, I agree, like it's risk reward. Basically, you're determining, do I want to farm at a higher risk than staking on ETH and like supporting the protocol? But I think most people are just going to say, I don't care about ETH. I don't care about the security. I'm just going to go where the money is.
Yeah. I mean, that's always how it has to be. But I think you hit a certain amount of capital at stake, fewer risks. Yeah. Similar to the way anybody's trying to multiply their portfolios. If you have less money, you're willing to be more concentrated in higher risk stuff. All right, let's talk a little bit about what you got here, Ethereum baseline price, because it's been, if you just look at it in a vacuum, you're like, freaking dump it, right?
Yeah, it doesn't really inspire confidence really one way or the other. I just did a 35-minute altcoin video. Go watch that after you've listened to our beautiful podcast. But the main TLDW of that is everything's pretty much mean reverting at this point. And so for me, I'm waiting for a trend reset completely. So for ETH, for example, I'm waiting for either a bearish TK cross and a bullish TK cross, or just like metrics need to reset or go sideways or something, because as it stands right now, it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, it just looks like a bearish retest off of a breakdown or something that just hasn't confirmed the full recovery. It's like partial. It's, right. It's just partially back up, kind of in no man's land.
Right. It's certainly more bold and bare. It's above 200 above cloud, but it didn't get a clean bounce on the Kijun. It is still near the Kijun. This could, like, you know, this could do too many things right now for me to be confident one way or the other where this is going to go.
Yeah. And when I look at, you know, Bitcoin in a similar way, it has not retested as strongly as Ethereum has. Like, the Bitcoin equivalent would have had to go back to maybe like 11K by now. And it's sitting down there at 10.2. So it's sitting here on these weekly supports doing like a flaggy thing, but it also has this iron curtain defense of 10K, you know, just wicking like crazy anytime it gets into four digits.
I'm really surprised 10K has held. I'm happily surprised, but yeah. that isn't a sentence I'd expect to say, you know, like 10K is holding and it's holding for a while.
Well, I look at it like this. I mean, it is holding right at the key weekly level of 10.2 that we've talked about forever, right? And we broke above, and now it looks like a perfect retest. And it's also, on a wick basis especially, the 20-week moving average, which is bull, bear, super indicator.
Right.
It just looks like a perfect retest. So I think it is maybe concerning that we're spending so much time down here on a daily basis. But if you look on a weekly, it's just like, oh, look, one little weekly, you know, doji thing down there, and we'll see what happens next week.
I don't think anything embodies the mean reversion as much as BTC sitting at the 20-week SMA.
Yeah. I mean, it's super bullish if you look at it on a weekly stance, because it's holding the weekly level after whatever you want to call it, a swing failure pattern of the prior weekly level of 11.5. So we bumped the top side of that, got, you know, shot down in the, you know, giant gap, because between 11.5 and 14K, all we had was a couple of wicks, unless you go back to 2017. But on the bottom side, we didn't retrace near as deeply as we could have. Like, we're at a very minimal retrace level. We didn't go to 92. We certainly didn't go down to, like, you know, bull market supports like the 200-week moving average. So it looks like everything's fine, unless you get back into the lower time frames, like the daily just lingering, or the 4-hour looking like it can't decide between being some kind of bear flag and rounded bottom. But it hadn't retraced the way Ethereum has. It would have to go up another 6 or 7% to fully retrace the range it broke down from. And Ethereum is almost back to that range, right?
Yeah, what I don't like about BTC is, like you're saying, it's not convincingly anything there. There's no pattern. There's no bottom.
It's taking its sweet time.
Yeah,
which is nerve wracking.
Yeah, but at the same time, ETH kind of is leading everything, so that gives me somewhat confidence that if ETH can pull up, BTC should be okay. And if I look at the pitchforks, ETH has held the median line of this pitchfork really well and is bouncing. Generally, how this works is price either sits on one half or the other half of the trend, and it's trying to reside on the upper half, whereas BTC is pretty clearly on the lower half. But the expectation is always mean reversion to the median line at some point in time. In BTC's case, that's 16K, so... that sounds crazy. It always sounds crazy, but that's what the projection is anyway.
Yeah. As a throwback to last week, you know, we talked about, hey, look at this weird, you know, broadening wedge thing. This is really ugly, but maybe it's real. It wasn't real. so like all those wicks down to, you know, the 370 to 380, they just provided a liquidity opportunity all the way down to what, 310, 307, 308, something like that, depending on exchange. And then it's just been holding the 333 line, similar to the 10.2 line on BTC. I don't even have on my chart where that 333 line goes back to, but I think it's the prior weekly support. And the one below takes us to like 285 or 248 below that. So if we lose this level, but, you know, all of these daily Ethereum levels, it looks to me like it's just a grind up from here, because there's several areas of potential resistance to get back to, say, 450 or like whatever the what's the continuation upwards type of place for you to flip the trend back and become like, you know, big bull?
I mean, I need a week to a week and a half to be sure based on the cloud, because like I was saying, it's just nothing. There's no trade to be made here for me. It's just on the high time frames, right? Like,
yeah, on the week, on the weekly USD, it's making a mockery of my all important box between 370 and 400. Cause you know, it broke down from it, but now it's back above it. And it's just insane on a weekly basis of what was a very clean level for a long time. It's making a big mess of it. It's also creating a lot of volume there. So like, it'll probably become a big volume node in the future, but it's very, very indecisive at the moment. If anything, I would say it still looks like a bearish retest, and Ethereum wants some kind of push down into sub 300, confirm the bull market on a weekly basis.
Yeah, but you can't be confident. Like, you're not going to bet money on that, right?
No,
like,
no, it's just where I'd want to be a buyer if it happens.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you're watching it, but it's not like a trade.
No, I don't think I can short into it with much confidence.
Yeah. And if I look at the link chart, the link USD chart, like, this is what I want to see when I'm looking for a trend continuation. Like, I want to see the metrics all go bearish and then all go bullish again. So this has at least a week, maybe two, to figure itself out.
Mm-hmm. But that's leaning like it wants to go bearish.
Yeah, like it wants to go here, right? But if it, after a week, starts curling up again, like, your long is there.
Maybe
right?
$14.
Like, so, and that's super obvious and clean mm-hmm. every time. You know, it's none of this like will she or won't she type stuff that we're talking about now. It's just like, that's just a Kumo breakout, right? Like, you'd long that. But yeah, that's what I'm watching for. So really, like, Link and ETH have kind of been the market leaders. So those are charts that I'm paying attention to a little bit more, because if they start to roll over, then the entire market probably will.
You think, I mean, certainly Ethereum is driving a lot of market action right now because of where the trading is occurring volume-wise. You think Link still is as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think Link belongs sub 10 for a long time. But if,
like, you don't Link, think Link's just pure rotation?
Yeah, it could be. But if Link curls up, then who am I to say that this market can't go to 45, you know?
Yeah. Okay, I agree with you on that. If Link curls up, it's definitely like everything is probably bullish. But I think if Link continues to be kind of a laggard or whatever, like chill, I feel like there could be an argument that it's just rotation out of Link into other things, you know. It doesn't necessarily make the whole market bearish if Link, you know, doesn't do anything significant. If Link goes back to $4, then that's probably bearish for everything. But if Link just dinks around, you know, $10 to $15, I don't make as much of that, because Link really needs some time to consolidate and chill.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying too. You can say Link is done, it probably is. Like, it probably doesn't go higher based on the MA multiplier. But if it does, everything else should as well. Like, that's my thing. Not saying it will. I doubt it will. But if it does, I think we're good for bullish continuation everywhere.
Yeah. If I force you to choose, would you say bullish continuation across the board, or do we need more retrace before a healthy return?
I'd say give me a week to 2 weeks, and I'll tell you for certain. I will bet money on it in a week to 2 weeks. Right now, I have no idea. You know, like, but if you look at something like ADA. ADA is what is it, like 40% down? Where's the 200?
I think ADA is a DeFi victim. Like,
to me, this looks like it's done forever. But at the same time, it's mean reverted to where you'd expect it to mean revert, right?
Yeah, I think several of these big caps, I think you could put Tezos in the same camp. I think they're on the struggle bus because there's no real decentralized exchange action for them. They're not part of the narrative that's hot right now. Yeah. Whereas Link is like Link, you know, I'm starting to understand the beauty of the oracles and all that stuff. because they're the price feed for all these different pools and crap that are trying to talk to each other, and people are trying to arbitrage and stuff. So I get that. ADA and Ethereum killers, they all look stupid right now, because other than being able to say they're faster, and which no one cares about because all the activity is on Ethereum, like, they're not proving their case, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Faster is only good if you can also have users, and none of them have users.
I think if fees on ETH continue to be insane, eventually people will rotate projects elsewhere.
Yeah.
Or move to second layer.
And layer two certainly seems reasonable. I think a ton rides on this ETH 2.0. However, the scalability is enhanced through that, what it enables, what people do there. And then the alternative, maybe we can talk some about this, like, there's people like Binance that are saying, hey, do everything you're doing on Ethereum, just switch to us. Same. Keep your code base. You just point things here and there and there, and voila. I think if anything's going to win the argument, that has a lot of potential, especially if you can establish, like, this kind of monopolization effect where you're also guaranteeing people a centralized exchange for additional liquidity. It's kind of nice to have centralized liquidity in addition to decentralized liquidity. So I think the Binance mechanism of just bribing people to go to your chain and then working just like Ethereum, that's compelling. I'm not sure I like it from a free market perspective, but it's certainly compelling.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's flipping out. CZ's flipping out. All these decentralized exchanges are flipping out. Anybody who has a chain, like Justin Sun, he's flipping out. He's like, why isn't this on my chain, right? Like, let's do DeFi stuff, right? Everybody wants...
We're DeFi too, bro.
Everybody wants an invitation to the party, right?
Yeah, I can't decide. Is that like top things, super top things, or new normal? Well,
it's just like ICOs. I don't think it's top things yet, because the yields are still pretty insane.
Plus, it's pretty easy to see some of the advantages that occur there, right? Like, it's just... It's clear. As soon as you start using it and you're like, wow, I don't have to, I'm in my wallet, I keep custody of this crap. We've talked about this for years. The beauty of non-custodial liquid swaps, you know, like, this has always been the dream.
And the problem is the fees and liquidity. Dude, and liquidity seems to be okay. It's the fees, the scaling of the fees that seem to be the problem.
That's exactly right. The at low size, it is very expensive. At significant size, it is tolerable. And this reminds me of the whole debate between Bitcoin and Lightning, right? It's like, you can't afford to send any transaction on Bitcoin when Bitcoin was going buck wild and getting spammed like crazy and all that. So Lightning has had a lot of promise there. But you still got to get to Lightning, you know? So... It's a little tricky. I mean, sending a transaction, like if I just go in MetaMask and I send something on Ethereum, I can do it for a few dollars. That's not that big of a deal. It's a big of a deal if it's less than, say, $100. You know, it's more expensive than a credit card transaction. That's very expensive. But if I'm sending like $500 or $5,000 or $50,000, a few thousand dollars to directly send Ethereum is not expensive. But once you start trading on these protocols, well, you're not spending $2 or $3. You're spending, right now, I mean, cheap is like $10, right, to make a transaction. Expensive is like $50. So I've made several, plenty of transactions that I spent $50 to make the transaction. And then you do some other stuff on top of that, like some of this pooling and staking and all that. You can make 6 or 7 transactions to get to the process where you're finally farming or getting yield. So if you're spending $100 or $200 going back and forth, well, you have to be farming or staking a whole lot of money before you make up the $200, or you have to leave it there for a really long time. And that starts becoming accessible.
Yeah, I think that's why we started to roll over with the DeFi stuff, is it choked out a lot of people because of the fees. Fees have been lower-ish over the past week.
They have.
They were getting insane. I mean,
oh, man. It was really bad.
Over one ETH to do anything with a smart contract was just,
that's a lot.
That's not real.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
Someone was asking about weekly ETH USD and this 450 to 750 range. It's still on the table. That's, if this goes higher, like that's what I expect. I expect 450 to 750 easy. If this can regather itself and go for highs. That's why I like using the daily to determine the entry and then using the weekly to determine the target. That's a perfect example of that sort of thing. Because like with the edge-to-edge stuff, you know where this should go over time. And then with the daily, you can fine-tune it and say, I'm going to get in and out here or there, depending on the signals, but I know where this should be going.
The other one for entry, one for target thing you could do instead of not even switching time frames is you could use like the singled cloud for an entry and the doubled cloud for a target.
Yeah. So if we look at metrics resetting, trend metrics resetting, like if we go to the 12-hour cloud with the doubled settings, this is exactly what I'm talking about. You can see how right now it's in the cloud, the TK cross is bearish, but if this moves past 400 again, then it's game on, and that's your entry signal.
Yeah. And, you know, usually you get some nice parity there too. Like if you clear, you know, the trends are should align kind of with your horizontal levels too. It's not exactly saying like new highs if you're just looking at your levels, but there's this spot in the middle right at 400 that has been a important level as a round number that I think you can get long and expect a continuation above without actually getting new highs. Because getting new highs, you have to clear 477, 478 on a daily basis. So there's a trade. There's a whole trade just in there, right? Just the, you could go 400 to 480, say, I think we're going to make equal highs and maybe my stop's below like 380. That's a nice little swing trade on its own.
Yeah, I too often discount those trades.
Discount as in like you don't want to take them?
I'm looking for the doubles, triples, and home runs versus like the singles, you know?
Yeah, I mean that's a 15 to 20% type of profit trade with a 5%.
Right, but that's still
downside.
A great trade. Like right. I just don't, I don't always pay attention to that.
Especially because on something that moves as fast as Ethereum can, that could be a one-day trade if it triggers properly.
For sure. Yeah, I agree.
And I've been, honestly, this is where a lot of my trading has been focused recently. You know, we've been talking about all this Uniswap stuff, and I think a lot of people are still visualizing it as, oh, I go get something that just got listed, and I try to hold it for like a 10X, and half of them are rug pulls and scams and blah, blah, blah. I haven't traded anything like that in a couple of weeks, maybe more than that. Like, I really try to stay out of the stuff that's so brand new that there's really no history, nothing real to pay attention to. I'm trading the things that are, like, top 200 coins in all of crypto. So maybe, what's that, Josh? Maybe above, like, $25 million market caps. And mostly been focused on things that are probably more than $100 million market cap. So the liquidity and the activity is still on the decentralized exchanges. You can still farm them and they're all that kind of stuff, but they're the kind of the biggest projects within that space, you know, the balancers, the MTAs, the YFI, several that I haven't traded hardly at all, like UMA, whatever that is, and Lend and Synthetics and Compound. There's some big projects and their daily moves can be 10% or more in either direction. So you can get some really nice swing trade setups on stuff that's very liquid with $50 million of volume a day or more. You don't have to be stuck in micro caps. Like there's still obviously opportunities of multiples in those micro caps, but there's plenty of swing trade potential in very large caps on decentralized exchanges.
Yeah, I agree. I'm personally less apt to pay attention to that.
What are you focused on trading right now?
I'm just watching BTC and ETH, really.
Just looking for overall market health.
Yeah, I was watching the watching for that dip at 300 on ETH. I got some fills at 310, 315.
Yeah, you said you thought we were going lower.
So yeah, I thought we were going to hit 300 on Kraken. We didn't end up hitting 300.
But when we were at like 370 last week, you said you thought you would get more, and I said, please, no. You got more.
We did get more, yeah. So that was good. So now it's just kind of like the wait-and-see game, like I keep saying. Like it's super uninteresting and boring, but that's what it is.
Yeah, and I would say even trading other stuff, without confirmed like bullishness out of Bitcoin and Ethereum, when there's enough of this uncertainty, getting a good swing out of anything else can be difficult as well. Like you really have to pay attention and time it right. And I talked about my weak hands earlier. Like, I mean, if something starts going against me, I am out. Like when there's uncertainty in Bitcoin and Ethereum, if I have some kind of trade setup where I'm looking for 15, 20% upside, I'm not sticking around for minus 10, minus 15, minus 20% upside. That's our downside. That's not near good enough of like a risk reward. Like I'm either right or I'm gone, right? Within maybe hours.
Those are the best trades anyway, when you're right almost immediately, you know? Yeah. Like if you buy the bounce and it bounces, you're right almost immediately.
Yeah.
There's no if then or buts about it, right? Like that's it.
Yeah, I'll use a couple examples because, you know, I've talked about these publicly. It's hard to acknowledge, like, every single part of a trade I make. But, like, BZRX is a really good example because I started buying it back too early. But then I averaged down a lot when it was consolidating between 40 and 60 cents. So I was watching this thing, and I was like, well, this is a perfect, like, bear pennant. But I'm not bearish enough on this thing that after, what was that? I mean, the thing, it went down 75%. So after 75%, I don't care if it's a bear pennant or not, I'm getting consolidation, I'm taking that trade. So I took the bullish part of the trade, and yeah, I want a dollar off of that, like, that's a proper return to mean kind of 50% of the downturn. But you know what? I sold all of it at a plus 30% back at like 70, 75 cents because, or 70, 72 cents, because it went to like 74 and it went right into this zone of congestion from one of the breakdown areas where I first started buying it. So I got back to break even on my original and I was plus 35% on my like significant ads. So as soon as I saw it start to turn there, I dumped it. I got out and I started adding it back a little bit today, not like full size, but this is a tiny trade. Like most people would look at me and be like, what's wrong with you and your super weak hands? And I'm like, yes, I have the world's weakest hands if I don't have confirmation in Ethereum and Bitcoin and I do have liquidity in a coin. You can call me weak-handed all you want. Like my hands are so weak in that scenario, because I do not want to become some like hyper bag holder on some of this stuff. So if you give me liquidity, if you give me the opportunity to get out at a gain when it starts to show any weakness while we don't have confirmation in Ethereum or Bitcoin, I'm going to do it and I'll try to find lower. And that's what I did. So I'm back in a little bit now, but my hands are still weak until we get that confirmation from Ethereum especially. But you know, like another one I'm active in right this moment is Dia. This is kind of like I don't know if it's a clone of Link, but it's another Oracle. And this just has this one box to the other box type of range trade potential is kind of the way I'm viewing it. If you see, you know, my screen. So I want to play it for that. Well, that's like a 60% gain. But I'm not going to sit here if it falls below the primary box. You know, like I'll take my 15% loss if I have to take it. I'm not going to hold this thing to retrace like 50%. That's not going to be me holding that bag. I'll take my loss. I'll get out.
Yeah. And the other thing we haven't even talked about is the legacy markets dealing with the potential for another stimulus coming or not. And VIX being back at 28, 30. Now, all of that's going to affect everything in crypto as well, most certainly.
Yeah, we should take a look. We've talked about the VIX. I actually think the VIX made a local top. I mean, it went back to 38 the other day. And it made me comfortable enough to start being more active. A daily close it made at like 35. So I looked at this and I was like, man, we could have some bad days in the legacy market here, but the VIX is not just a normal, like, you don't chart the VIX the same way you do other things. Like, it spikes and then it usually takes something significantly more disruptive than what already happened to make new highs. It's not the type of thing where it just kind of stair steps up. It spikes up and stair steps down. So after I saw it hit 35, 38 that one day, I was like, man, that was really aggressive selling. I'm going to be a little more comfortable popping back in because we just had two huge days down in the legacy market. And even if we have some, like, some degree of downward movement here and there, I'm okay being in and on spot for a while. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I still want it below 25 before I'm super confident in what's going on with crypto, just because historically that's been better for crypto.
Yeah, but usually the turning point, both for like gold bottoms and Bitcoin bottoms that you and I have studied publicly on this podcast, is basically as soon as the VIX peaks, often will mark a bottom for precious metals and for Bitcoin.
Yeah, and I was looking at gold today as well. And it
started to recover. I don't think it is now, but it's down a little bit. But it's not like it's not like super dumping. It's just consolidating.
That looks bullish to me. I don't know. Like this doesn't look like a descending triangle waiting to break down. It looks like a flag ready to break up again, you know?
Yeah, I hope so, because I got back into my gold miner positions for that very reason.
It looks like another markup coming.
Yeah. I've been playing gold miners in my legacy accounts, and you know, I played it from here on that first push. It was huge. Everybody knows that, but I got back in it when it flagged and started looking good there. And once again, when I got to resistance, I sold strength, only made, or I say only made like 30%, felt great about it. And then I sold it maybe 2 weeks ago now, when it was making a lower high. And then it started turning into more of a pennant. So I kind of jumped the gun, I guess you could say. And I got back in before this pennant resolved. And I'm kind of committing to hold it for a little while here. But I do think that it can have another push up. And if gold miners have another push up, I expect that means gold itself can have another push up as well. If it does go down, I expect the previous breakout to be a nice support for it. Like, I don't expect it to just go, you know, go down like 60% or something. So I could average in with more size if I really wanted to. But I feel comfortable being in that when I also combine it with feeling like the VIX peaked and, you know, you showed that gold consolidation, some things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you pull up the heat map with orders on it? I forget what website that is.
For what?
For BTC. Some Bill in the chat was asking about.
I have a heat map feature on TrendSpider.
Okay.
If you go to letterstats.com/TrendSpider.
I mainly just use that when we're watching certain levels like break, about to break, or like if we're hitting like 10K from the downside or something. You can see, like, is there a massive whale order at that level? Is that where we're not breaking that level? Or you can look at it before a move happens and say, where's the support based on the order book?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about there's Trading Light, and then there's, oh, gosh. There's another one. You're talking about something else, the actual what the book looks like.
Yeah, so anyway, I don't use it, like, a lot personally, but I know people who, like,
live by.
That's all they look at, is like that sort of stuff. To me, the orders can be moved around like in a second, in a millisecond. So it might look like there's an order sitting there for 3 days, and then price will go to that level and then it'll just disappear. So it's like, to me, there's no real value there. if we're watching a certain level with an expectation of support resistance based on the order book.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just showing you where are those orders. What's the market depth look like? I can't remember the name of the other website.
I can't either. That's why I'd pull it up myself, but that just goes to show you how infrequently I use it.
Yeah, I have some friends I messaged, and I'll see if we can get it before the end of the show. Tensor charts.
That's it, Bill. Thank you. Yeah, Tensor charts is, I think it's free, right?
Yeah, there's a free version. View I'm pulling up right now. So if you're on the stream with us, then
yeah. So there's an order on ETH there. Yeah, like 400. It looks like. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody's got something there. I'm on Bitfinex ETHUSD. I'd rather look at Bitfinex BTCUSD is where one of our big whales likes to splash around. I mean, in general, I'm not seeing anything so significant here. Like, there's definitely a lot of orders at like 9,800, 9,500 if we dip down. But there have been times where you are like, wow, somebody really has a lot to sell at 11.5. You know,
yeah,
there was a lot to sell at 12.2. But what we have now is more on the bid side. It's like, this is the Bitfinex whales are buying 9,500 and above. They'll appreciate those dips. So,
yeah, but look at this. It's like 11.3 on the way down, that yellow.
Yeah, they bought 11. They bought 11.2. Yeah. They bought 10.5, they bought 10.2. I mean, someone's just accumulating the corn.
So maybe I'm just thinking of it wrong or using it wrong, but like when I see bids at that level, I'd expect support at that level. Obviously, no, I can just sell through that, but
I mean, some people would say liquidity wants to be filled, right? So,
yeah,
you know, you look back over time and it's got some magnet effects. I think that's true to a degree. But it's not going to make me chase a short or something into it. It's going to make it's going to make me confident as long as the percentage between where I am and where those bids are is not like gigantic. And what's that, a 10% move? I'm not going to freak out over a 10% move.
So like, is it usable? Yes. Is it actionable in any way? Maybe. I don't know. It's not for me personally, but maybe I know people that use it.
Maybe I want to use that if I need some kind of like psychological help, if I'm scared. You know, it's like, I want to jump in here. It's 9,600. We just went down 10%. What should I do? Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, the Bitfinex whales filling right now. Whose team do I want to be on? I want to be on the Bitfinex whales team.
Yeah. So I think that's it for me. I don't know what else. Do you got anything else?
Not really, man.
One last thing. I just want to say one last thing about the Total 2. It's an underutilized ticker on TradingView. TOTAL number 2. It is the altcoin market cap, excluding, it's just crypto market cap, excluding BTC. But this sort of embodies the status of everything. Like, it's mostly ETH, sure, but it's got LINK and everything else, obviously. And if you're looking at trend metrics, you're like, okay, we're above the 200 a decent amount. The cloud is this sideways ranging thing where it's not really clear what's going on. So this should help. It helps me anyway, determine where should my trades be? What should my entries be? What is the market sentiment in general? And like we've discussed 20,000 times already, it's just sideways, ranging, neutral, and ready for metrics to like sort of reset.
One other thing on that too is that the rate of coin creation happening right now is so high.
So
consider that when you're looking at total altcoin market cap. It's building in the fact that new coins are being created, so the market cap and the dominance are going to reflect that. It's going to make altcoins look a little stronger than they actually are. It's just a part of the way those calculations work. So real Bitcoin dominance is not being as affected as that. Bitcoin going up or down is still going to have a big impact on true dominance. There's just a lot of altcoins being created, man. A ton. Yeah. That's the one thing I don't like. It's because you're spreading out the liquidity, right? You're spreading out the Ethereum, the stable coins, and the Bitcoin that people are going to be putting in these alts if you just have more and more and more altcoins that people are wanting to invest in. And it makes it to where it's a little harder over time to get as much of a move out of them as you may want otherwise.
Yeah, and it'll expand and contract naturally over time.
Yeah, and it should find strength in the more solid projects or whatever people think will pump the most.
Yeah.
Not sure how to differentiate between those two sometimes, but that's what we got. Hey, one other thing I want to finish with. I want to share, I'm doing a fantasy football league. This is totally different, Josh. Doing a fantasy football league with my buddy Dale, if y'all know Crypto Dale. You can go to fantasystatus.com. There's three leagues, and it's just a bunch of crypto Twitter people competing against each other. So if you go to fantasystatus.com, you can kind of keep up with the league, and we've actually got some sponsors that we're working with, so a sponsor per league, which is kind of fun. So go to fantasystatus.com. If you like fantasy football, we're going to be tweeting about these leagues and talking about these leagues. I'll have more about that in the next episode. I'm going to do a mini interview with Dale and pull it onto the show. But yeah, check out fantasystatus.com if you want to see that stuff. And with that, I guess we'll head out for the day, Josh. Thanks for joining me and for everyone else. Be safe out there. Have fun. We'll talk to you later.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely breathe.